So recently, a friend of mine that I, well, a friend that I haven't even seen in at least 20 years that I was friends with when I was like a freshman in high school, started a Facebook group called like 20 years ago or something. And all of my teenage friends are posting all their old photos on Facebook. And they have created this album within this group.
They're so good.
They're so good. The fashion. Yeah. It's the looks.
The looks.
Oh my God.
The thank, hair.
Thank
everything.
God we had physical photographic evidence of this stuff. The children today don't know what they're missing.
It's unbelievable.
Their photos are far superior today, but the fact that they don't have physical copies of them is a detriment to
them.
Absolutely,
because they're not going to be looking at their phone 20 years
no,
in the
when
past.
when they're pushing 40, they're not going to be like, have a friend be like, oh, remember when you used to wear hemp chokers with female clay mushrooms on them?
Remember when you made your own flag pants?
Yes.
Nobody asked you to, but you did.
Remember that? When all your friends wore JNCO jeans with like tulle shirts and
do you remember when all of your female friends were bringing back barrettes? Yes. Like that was a thing?
Yes. Do you remember every single person you ever met had a center part? Yes. Including you, because you had long hair.
I remember having such a part, including you, I love that.
Oh, my stars.
What a movement that's back again. Mm-hmm. And I love it.
And maybe we'll put some of these photos up on the interwebs.
We're putting all of them back.
So, welcome to Beyond Reproach. Yes. This is Tux Lerzel.
This is Stephanie Domingo.
Hello, and welcome to Beyond Reproach. We be drinking and we be swearing.
Yes, and we be talking about the past.
Uh-huh. We come to you from Bushwick, Brooklyn, where we record on land belonging to the Lenape Nation, a nation that is one of many that's still very much out here doing its thing, and we'd like to acknowledge that. Beyond Reproach is a show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government. Today, we're drinking a slow gin fizz.
I remember these.
I've never had one, ever. Yeah. Today's Stephanie's story is from the 1980s.
Yes, it gets going in the 1980s. It's from
Starts earlier, but really takes off in the 80s.
The late 40s.
Okay. We've done several 80s cocktails on this show. I hate the 80s because the cocktails are garbage. Everything is, bright colors, sweet as sweet can be, super fruity. It's just not the kind of cocktail that I want. Yes. So a while back, I was having a hard time finding a cocktail that I imagined to be palatable. And I asked my mom what she remembered people drinking in the 80s because, you know, I was alive, but I wasn't going to the bars. So she was. Let's ask her.
Yeah.
She said basically like where we grew up in upstate New York, everyone was poor. Everyone was just drinking beer.
Of course.
Maybe you would order a screwdriver at the bar, which like gross. We're not doing that. Yeah. But she said that her favorite thing, and other people were drinking this as well, it wasn't just her, was a slow gin fizz. So I kind of put that in my back pocket. That's not what we made that episode. I think that was the episode that I did the wine cooler thing.
Yeah.
But I was like, I'm gonna revisit this.
Was so delicious too.
Yeah. Before we get into the actual cocktail here, before we get into the history of a slow gin fizz, do you know what slow gin is?
I know that it is magenta colored.
Yes.
And that's end statement.
The end. It is a gin based liqueur.
And it
is, yes.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is named after the slow berry, spelled S-L-O-E, not S-L-O-W. Slow berries are these teeny tiny, tart, jammy little berries that grow in clumps on blackthorn trees in England and Western Europe. It is a cousin to the plum, so it has sort of a plummy flavor.
Plummy, yum.
In Europe, slow gin is usually made at home in small batches. This isn't something that you like... Well, now
so
it is.
You just gather berries and then add gin. And
exactly.
It's like you
and
kind
sugar.
Of, and
yeah.
Oh, and sugar.
Yeah. Okay. So you would go in the fall when the berries are in season. You go harvest from like a blackthorn hedge, harvest all the slow berries, soak them in gin, add a little sugar. Because they're very tart. If you didn't add sugar, it wouldn't really taste good.
Okay.
And then you let it sit for a couple of months. So slow berries are in season in the fall. But it needs a few months to mature. So in England, slow gin is considered a winter beverage because that's when it's really like macerated long enough to be good. Mm. The earliest you would really drink it is like at Christmas, people bring out
that's the earliest.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, you probably made several bottles after harvesting all these slow berries. You bring one out at Christmas time, but really it probably needs to like January, February to really be like good or at its best anyways. We do not have blackthorn trees and slow berries in the United States. They're not native to the U.S. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things that aren't native to the U.S. That are here.
If they are here, it's not like they're invasive. It's not like they're everywhere.
Oh, okay,
so we just, we don't have slow berries here. Okay. So I'm not really sure.
That's like England's mulberries.
Yeah, totally. Oh my God. Fucking mulberries.
I'm sorry to bring up your nemesis.
I don't know what it is about mulberries, but in New York City, especially in Brooklyn, every apartment I have ever lived in has had a mulberry tree in the backyard.
Yeah. This is Halloween, and Tux is haunted by mulberries.
I am haunted by mulberries, yes. And we're like maybe potentially buying a house. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
And there's a fucking mulberry tree.
Yeah.
It's very small. It just started, so I'm going to cut it down like immediately. Mulberry trees are the goddamn worst. Yes. And when I was a kid, I had a grandmother that had a mulberry tree in the backyard of a house that she was renting. And
yeah. They're just invasive.
They're
because
so,
the birds eat them. The squirrels eat them. They poop everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, that's that.
Yeah. The one that's in the yard in the house that we're looking into buying is like, it's growing through a crack in the sidewalk. Like,
it doesn't take much.
Yeah.
For them to take root at all.
I'm not sure if slow berries and blackthorn trees are like that.
Like, okay.
But I assume they're usually planted like in hedges to separate like estates and that kind of thing. So,
cute.
But I don't know why slow gin became popular in the United States. I imagine that like
rich people.
Somebody brought some with them. But like by the 80s, slow gin was kind of everywhere. It's an integral ingredient in several sort of like classic 80s cocktail recipes. It's necessary to make an Alabama Slammer. It's necessary to make a slow, comfortable screw.
Oh, yes.
And because people had it on hand for these other recipes, people were also drinking slow gin fizzes a lot in the
80s. These names are too much for me.
I know. A slow, comfortable screw. Oh, the 80s. What was wrong with us?
Yeah. It's like you really have to be so literal. Like, oh, I get it. You're having sex. Yeah,
but
like,
an SLOE comfortable screw.
Stupid.
Get out of here. But in the 80s, the slow gin that we were drinking was being mass produced by liqueur companies, and it was not this like homemade, natural, like real berries soaked in gin with sugar. This was made with artificial colors and artificial flavorings.
Yeah, it was pink.
This like bright purpley red pink color, like super, super bright, much more fruity than the real thing. The real stuff is this sort of like deep, dark, jammy, ruddy red color. Like,
yeah, as mixed, it looks like grapefruit juice.
Yeah. Stephanie was expecting, when I told her that I had a bottle of slow gin
in
the
kitchen.
Yeah, I'm just
like, but where?
She couldn't find it because she thought it was going to be this like neon purpley red
color. I was looking for something that was like deep magenta.
Yeah.
It's like a ruby color.
Yeah.
It's very like ruddy.
Yeah. You have to like look at it through the light to even see that it's red.
Yeah. It looks brown.
Yeah. Thankfully, a few years back, a British gin company called Plymouth Gin started making the traditional version of slow gin based on an 1883 recipe that they had.
Wow. 1883.
And they started shipping it to the States, and it kind of took off. And now there are several gin companies, Heyman's Gin, Sipsmith's Gin, all make these more like traditional real slow gins with real slow berries.
Yeah.
And now there's a gin company in Greenpoint, Brooklyn called Greensmith's Gin.
Yes.
That makes, it's called a beach plum gin. Beach plum.
Oh.
Because we don't have slow berries in the United States.
But what's a beach plum?
It's a cousin to the slow, sort of plum-like, but smaller. And it is indigenous to the Atlantic coast, grows from like Maryland to Maine.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
But it has a similar flavor. So Greensmith's gin, you can buy an American slow-ish gin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you ever see beach plum gin, it would be what you would use to make an American slow gin fizz.
I'm so curious.
Yeah. But so today, what we're drinking is a slow gin fizz made with the slow gin, like traditional recipe, not the stuff that we would have been drinking in the
80s. Yeah,
because
no, definitely
I'm
not.
Fancy and I'm not doing that. I'm not putting that shit in my body.
No.
That was an anti-flexor joke.
It was.
Yes.
And I hate you for it.
As for the cocktail, the slow gin fizz, should we?
Yeah, let's cheers. Let's cheers it up. Cheers.
When I was a kid at school learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, If you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
Ooh. Oh. So jammy.
Very jammy.
Oh my God, I love
it. It's delicious.
Oh my God.
It's a little sweet. It is a little summery.
Sweet, but it's like, wow. It's so bright tasting.
It's like an Italian soda.
Yes. So I had a slow gin. I didn't drink them often, but they were available at this dive bar in Ithaca. So in college, I was having the 80s version that was like a deep magenta, and it was just very sweet.
Yeah.
It did not taste jammy at all.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm glad that I sprung for the good stuff and not the 80s
stuff. It is delightful. It's a little tart, too, which I love.
I love it, yeah. So the recipe for the slow gin fizz is based on a take on the classic gin fizz, which a gin fizz is made with gin, lemon, sugar, seltzer and an egg white, a shaken egg white.
Oh, okay. To make it creamy and frothy.
Yeah, exactly. Traditionally, a slow gin fizz, you swap the real gin for a slow gin, and you leave out the egg white. You get the frothiness just from the soda water.
Yeah.
It's much lighter and brighter and sweeter than a traditional gin fizz. It's also less boozy because it's a liqueur and not just gin. It's cut with the berry juice and the sugar. So you can have as many as you want because it's not super boozy.
We've heard comments from people who are cocktail enthusiasts who are just like, are you lying and saying that all these drinks are delicious? We are not lying. We will tell you. Well, there was that one time when we had
the Dirty Martini.
The Dirty Martini is a drink that is classic and people love it, but we just don't love it.
Yeah. I think that was the only time that we've ever had one that we were both like, this is not for us.
There was a time when we had, it was that purple drink that had the lavender.
Oh, the Aviator.
The Aviation, yes. The first sip, because it was so cold, did taste like medicine.
Yeah.
As time went on, we're like, oh, okay, this is good.
Yeah.
It's less sharp.
I think that if I cut the simple syrup or maybe even just left the simple syrup out, this would be perfect
for me. I love it.
It's really good.
It does taste like an Italian soda.
Yeah. So it's slow gin, a simple syrup, lemon juice, fresh squeezed lemon juice, and soda water. That's it.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
So my story isn't like scary, but it does involve monsters.
Okay.
For sure.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start by saying once upon a time, there was a group of people heading towards our southern border.
Oh, no.
You might have heard a little something about them. They were fleeing terrorism and violence in their home countries in Central America, and they had the audacity to come here seeking asylum as refugees.
Oh, no.
Yes. Oh, no, is right.
The horror.
Yes. This is why I did this, because it's like the horror of... Yeah, so I'm, of course, referring to the infamous caravan of migrants, you know, coming from Central America for a period of time not long ago. This was like 2018, where the media was losing their fucking minds.
Yeah.
I found some quotes. I picked two that were my favorite. They describe them as the end of America as we know it.
Oh, my fucking God.
Really, girl? Ugh. The end of America?
Grow up.
Or my favorite, an attack on the sovereignty of this nation.
The sovereignty of the country that, like, prides itself on accepting immigrants. Give us your poor, you're hungry, you're tired.
Yes.
I butchered that, but you know, I'm drunk, leave me alone.
You guys can't hear my neck snapping, but it just snapped because it is so ridiculous. Instead of being seen as regular asylum seekers, which is a totally mundane, routine part of our immigration system, they were talked about as this invading army full of hidden terrorists secretly plotting,
for fuck's sake,
to violently overthrow the government.
If only.
Just, you know, hyperbole, nonsense, just fear-mongering, the huge. But we don't know anything about these, like, you know, secret government agents, like, plotting to destroy something from within.
What could you be talking about?
Turns out, we quite literally wrote the training manual on how to terrorize and destabilize Latin American governments.
Oh, no.
Not only that, we went so far as to open a training facility and combat school on American soil to teach civilian repression and just, you know, torture to police and military officials. My scandal today is the terrifying history of the School of the Americas.
Oh my God. I have not done much research on this, but it's like,
it's a good one.
Yes. I do know of it, but I don't know about it.
So it goes by a lot of different names. in the 80s, the failing New York Times, they called it the School of the Dictators.
Uh-huh.
But it also goes by the name the School of the Assassins, uh-huh. which sounds really sexy. When I read that, I'm just like, ooh. But it's not sexy. Nope. It's really murdery. It's a terrorist training camp.
Yes. Isn't that where, what's his
name?
All
of them. Pinochet.
The one from Panama.
Noriega.
Yes.
All of them. I'm excited for this now that you know a little bit about it.
Yeah.
But first, the toast.
A toast.
Let us raise our glasses to military aid, to our tax dollars hard at work creating a boot camp for the real bad hombres.
Oh my God. Us?
What?
Yeah.
We would never. Cheers.
To destabilizing Central America so we can extract all their resources.
Correct. So thank you for saying that. Because yes. Before I jump into my actual scandal, I wanted to talk about Banana Republics because they are really important. They are the foundation of my scandal. Their history began in 1870 when we began to import bananas.
So that's why they're called Banana Republics. Correct. I never actually knew that. I always assumed it had something to do with that.
So the first person to import, well, the first corporation to import bananas would become the Chiquita Brands International. They bought bananas on the cheap in Jamaica and resold them in Boston in 1870 for 1,000% of a markup.
I've rolled my eyes so hard that it hurts.
And I just started, so
I want to put my head down.
You need to pick up your eyeballs, pop them back in.
That's so reminiscent of Hawaii with the pineapples and Mr. Dole.
Researching this scandal definitely brought up Hawaii vibes, definitely brought up vibes about Panama.
Yeah, with Noriega. Yeah, mm-hmm. Jesus.
So the term Banana Republic, this is according to Wikipedia, this is their definition, was used to describe any politically unstable country with an economy dependent upon exporting a limited resource product. Mm-hmm. So something like agriculture or minerals.
Sure.
What I remember learning in school about Banana Republics is that they required a dictator to maintain order. You needed a dictator who was taking bribes from foreign corporations or foreign governments, i.e. the United States of America.
Imagine that.
For the right to exploit the labor of the poor people who are actually doing, you know, picking the bananas, cultivating the bananas.
Bananas wouldn't just naturally cost 15 cents a piece.
Tux, I'm glad you're seated, but no, it's not. They would not naturally cost that at all.
I knew there was a reason that I hated bananas.
You really do bananas. Hate bananas.
The worst.
Bananas.
Ooh, yeah. Well,
even just a whiff of bananas, you might get it away from me.
Yeah.
I swear you have like some like extra sensory it feels perception like when it comes to bananas.
It is such a strong flavor and it permeates through anything.
Yeah.
But now I feel morally superior because I hate them so much.
I see that. You're wrong, but I understand your point of view. So the School of the Americas, it opened in 1946 in Fort Armador in the Panama Canal
Zone. Imagine that.
It was not called the School of the Americas at this time, but for simplicity's sake, I'm just going to call it that.
Sure.
It went through a number of changes that were administrative and like, why complicate?
Who cares? Yeah.
Thank you. Who cares? So its mission on paper was to train the increasing number of Latin Americans attending U.S. service schools in the Canal Zone. And by Latin Americans, I don't mean like Mexican Americans. I mean from Latin American countries.
Uh-huh.
But there were some Puerto Rican people also going to this school at the time.
Okay.
In Panama. Its goal was to, quote, improve ties with Latin American militaries and educate them in the virtues of democratic civilian control over the armed forces. They
wrote that down. I feel like there's going to be so much dust and hair on my eyeballs by the end of the show from having to pick them up off the floor.
During the first few years of the school, it struggled with a lot of chronic under-enrollment. Latin American government officials, they preferred to have their military trained on U.S. soil. They're just like, what is this like Crystal Pepsi shit in Panama? Like, we want to be trained in Texas. What is this shit?
Yeah.
But the bigger issue was the U.S. instructors. It was off-putting for them to see different military cadets of varying education, varying classes, varying races, together in one class.
What year was this again?
1946.
Oh, yeah. They were like, absolutely not.
Yeah. When I read this, I'm like, this reminds me of your Panama Canal episode. Episode 2, if you haven't checked it out, get into it. It's very long.
Yes, it is. And we were very drunk.
Yes, we were very drunk. Tux goes first. And it's a really great scandal.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the 40s. You know, white supremacy is just, you know.
Et cetera.
Yeah, white supremacy, et cetera. Thank you for the shorthand. We can't have different skin tones in the same class. So they eventually created two different classes for people who were higher rank, we know what they look like, and lower ranked servicemen. So during the 1940s and the 50s, the school bragged that their training in Panama was equal to or even surpassing training in the U.S.
Wow.
I'm just like, whatever that means.
So
when a group of Argentine military officers attended this three-month course in 1948, the school restructured its whole program to cater to them, to create this image that the U.S. was enterprising and efficient and powerful.
Oh, yes. We're the best, aren't
we? We're the best. But it was like, you know, it was post-war, like everything, all of Europe is in shambles. So, you know, we can flex a little bit. So administrators at SOA, they wanted to play up the idea of Argentine racial superiority.
Okay.
In Latin America, they're just like, you are the chosen one. They wanted to create this like feeling of camaraderie and like equality between white American instructors and these Argentine soldiers. They're just like, you speak Spanish, but you're like sturdy like us, you know?
Yeah.
You're real sturdy. We like you.
You come from European stock, I'm assuming. Yes.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So much of the information for my scandal came from a human rights watchdog organization called School of the Americas Watch.
Okay.
And from the anthropologist Leslie Gill. Gill has written the most comprehensive, just deep dive into the School of the Americas. I don't know how she got the clearance that she got, but she went behind the scenes.
Wow.
And it's amazing. So she argued that the school not only, this is from her book, not only trained students, but incorporated them into the ideology of the American way of life by steeping them in a vision of the empire that identified their aspirations with those of the United States. So they were bamboozled by this, you know, American dream TM.
Yeah.
Like that's what they like took them to malls and shit. Ugh. 6 years after the school opened, the students were overwhelmingly from Latin American countries. There was a time when there were a lot of Puerto Ricans and also Mexican Americans taking training there. But now it's like exclusively like foreigners.
Okay.
And it's because these governments were sending their military, like all of their military, there for training because the U.S. was footing the bill.
Why wouldn't you?
This is what we mean by military aid. So the U.S. was paying for their transportation. They were giving them a per diem, and they paid for the entire course costs under this like umbrella of military aid. When I read that, I'm like, wait, this is what military aid is? In 1956, English was eliminated as the instructional language, and Spanish was made the official language of the School of the Americas because they wanted to make sure that everyone was understanding everything. And at this time, I mean, I don't want to be like in defense of SOA because they're grade A garbage in every way. But at this time, they weren't teaching them anything too out there.
Okay.
I mean, it was still garbage. Let me stop.
It's all like capitalist
bullshit. Yeah, they were teaching them white supremacy, which is garbage. But because these Latin American countries were buying weapons, they were training them on these weapons.
Okay.
Like it made sense. Like if you're going to buy a bunch of, you know, helicopters or whatever, you want to make sure that your military knows how to operate them.
Sure.
However, in 1959, after the revolution in Cuba, when the puppet that we were backing canceled their elections and then the people rose up like, excuse you, and toppled his regime, everything changed. Everything changed. The U.S. military, they adopted a really hardline stance in reaction to the perceived threat of this international communist conspiracy cabal. In 1961, President JFK, who's wig and edges were recently snatched at the Bay of Pigs, he ordered the school to reorganize its entire curriculum to focus on teaching anti-communist counterinsurgency training.
Of course.
So in 1963, the school officially became the U.S. Army School of the Americas. Even though through the mid to early 60s, there were now a pretty big surge of Americans coming in to take classes in Panama on jungle warfare because they were starting to be in, you know, Korea and Vietnam at this point.
Sure.
So they needed this extra special training. Several recently declassified U.S. military training manuals, like, I'm going to get into this later, but there's been a lot of leaks, and there's like a big scandal at the time, and then it kind of just fades away. Mm-hmm. So a whole bunch of documents were declassified, and it shows how SOA instructors taught terrorism.
Yeah.
And explicitly encouraged the violation of the most basic human rights. So the manuals that were leaked, they were leaked and then declassified, they provided a pretty damning paper trail and proved how the U.S. trained Latin Americans and other militaries to infiltrate and spy upon civilians and nonviolent groups. Nonviolent groups like unions, healthcare workers, political parties, just student organizations, charitable organizations. Mm-hmm. The clergy was a huge target of these people. There were guides that explained in detail how to treat mundane political opposition like they were the Taliban. There were courses on how to circumvent laws, on due process and arrests and detention. In these how-to guides, the U.S. advocated tactics such as executing guerrillas, Jeez. Blackmail, false imprisonment, physical abuse, using truth serum to obtain information, paying bounties for enemy dead. According to SOA training materials, counterintelligence agents were advised that one of their main functions was to recommend targets for neutralization.
Neutralization.
What does that mean? They went to the dentist. They never came back.
Exactly.
You know, they had bad cavities. Get off my back.
Yes. They died of natural causes, okay? It's fine.
They were shot after they were dead, yes. Okay? They were eating trick cereal, got them. It wasn't the bullets. Shut up. So the manual's discovery, they detailed what many civilians located in these countries were saying about their SOA graduates. They're just like, hey, UN, like, I think they're being trained to, like, do terrorism. Maybe you can look into this.
Nothing to see here.
It is worth saying that these Latin American countries, they did not need the U.S. to show them how to violate human rights. They were perfectly capable of violating human rights in, like, anti-democratic ways on their own. But they were being taught this by the U.S.
We made them really good at it.
Yeah. And they just gave them the green light because it's like, okay, the biggest swinging dick militarily is teaching us this. Like, who's going to stop us if we do it? No one.
Violating human rights is cool, but have you ever done it while eating McDonald's?
Have you ever done it in a mall?
Okay. I mean, come on.
You haven't lived.
It's better than sex.
I just thought about just, you know, how all of the 80s cocktails are like sexual. Uh-huh. It's like torturing people in a mall. It's like a cocktail.
It's got slow gin in
yes. it. So these SOA manuals, they were adopted by Latin American militaries heavily in the 1970s and 1980s. In Chile and Argentina's dirty wars, which thousands of dissidents just disappeared.
Root canals. Disappeared of natural causes.
Yes. By military dictators in Brazil, Paraguay, Uruguay, in the Central American wars, where tens of thousands of civilians were just killed, just murdered. Mass graves in Bolivia, Chile.
I think you need to loosen your jaw gums.
You're right.
Over there.
Let me have a sip.
Bolivia. Never been to Bolivia. I hear it's lovely this time of year.
It is lovely this time of year. You need to go. You need to visit. I do feel, yes, my jaw gums are real loose right now. I feel better. So in Bolivia and Chile, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, Venezuela, just like trash. But also, we can't forget Puerto Rico, because they were sending a lot of people to the School of the Americas.
Oh, dear.
So in most cases, militaries being trained not only suppressed armed rebellion, like, you know, guerrillas that were actively trying to bring them down, but they cracked down so heavily on civilians who were just trying to vote.
Yeah. We can't have that. They're brown, Stephanie. They should know better.
So it's the late 70s, it's the early 80s. So these materials came before the Carter administration, and they're just like, what? Yeah,
we've been doing how much for how long?
Yeah.
Excuse me?
For 30 years at this point. So
some He's of, like, the whole time?
The whole time. he was shook, he was gooped and gagged. So some of these teaching materials, like the most egregious ones, they were pulled from circulation.
Okay.
Under Carter.
Good.
Yeah. He thought correctly that these are going to lead to human rights abuses. They might. You don't know.
They haven't yet. That's for sure. But we don't want that to even be possible.
We don't want that to happen. We are responsible. So despite his reservations, he believed that training provided by the School of the Americas was critical to furthering the, quote, national interests of the United States, because it created attitudes favorable to the United States. So to justify his decision in 1980 of continuing to fully finance the School of the Americas, he argued that not doing so would endanger the future of SOA. So St. Jimmy was also lies.
Yeah. Oh, fuck off.
So the torture training manuals suspended under Carter were reintroduced under Reagan.
Imagine that.
Because Jimmy didn't destroy them. They're just like, we shouldn't use them now.
Gross.
Let's send them away.
They're in detention.
Yeah. Yeah, in 1982, this is when it starts to get really, really bad. This is when it starts to get really bad. In 1982, the Reagan administration, they asked SOA to rush out a new counterintelligence program for its school. The instructors are like, what do we do? Like, so much has changed with military. Like, we need something fresh. So they reached out to the CIA's Project X.
Oh.
It sounds how you think it sounds, like the worst. Uh-huh. If you really want nightmares, Google Project X.
Oh, Jesus.
It was a CIA manual that was developed in Vietnam as part of their assassination program. So just, you know, think on that. Think about that when you're in bed asleep. Yeah, Project X, it's like, you guys aren't even trying to be about the right. Mm-mm. You're like doing villainous shit.
Yeah.
And calling it Project X.
Like, mwah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trash. As new techniques were developed and then adopted at SOA, the military became increasingly protective of their course content.
But why?
According to one scholar, by the mid-1960s, this is a quote, trainees required security clearances to even view the course descriptions of military intelligence courses.
That's fine. That's normal.
Everything's fine. Uh-huh. We're that dog in the room that's burning.
Yes.
Everything's fine. But I think this is a good spot for some
Respressments?
Some respressments.
I could use a respressment myself.
Right?
I need a break. I'm like,
oh. It's a lot.
I'm already overwhelmed.
Happy Halloween.
Yeah. Ooh. BRB.
I'm Natalie.
And I'm Cass.
And we're the hosts of Shared History,
a comedic history podcast exploring the stories of the often overlooked or underrepresented.
The people and events your history books may have glossed over, whitewashed, man-washed, or left out completely.
From the Mayan creation myth to the Deaf President Now movement of the 1980s.
From ancient scientist Avicenna to first female principal chief of the Cherokee Nation, Wilma Mankiller.
If you saw it in a footnote once,
or have never heard of it,
we are here to share it with you.
Join us in a rotating guest list featuring scholars, writers, teachers, entertainers, entrepreneurs, subject matter experts, and more.
Tune in to Shared History on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, you know the drill.
And follow us at Shared Pod on Instagram and Twitter.
And as always,
share you later.
We're back with fresh cocktails.
We are back, yes. You adjusted the recipe.
I adjusted, yes. I tried it without simple syrup at all, and I was actually shocked to realize that it does need a little bit of sweetness added, because yes. It's very, very tart without any sugar.
Mm-hmm. It's sour.
But I reduced the amount of simple syrup. This is a little bit more sort of like you can taste the other flavors more, and it's not quite as sweet.
Okay, so we're back into it. So some of the declassified course textbooks were coming to light. There were guides on how to impose curfews, military checkpoints, house-to-house searches, ID cards, rationing. I'm like, is this like concentration camp for dummies?
Yeah.
The answer is yes. Us. These lessons, because this is like a course that was being taught like it was in college. The lessons were presented without reference to any civilian laws.
Of course
they were. What's a law?
Yeah.
Do you put it on your feet? It's like a boot, correct? Yeah. I've heard of laws, but I'm not familiar. There was a course textbook called Human Resource Exploitation.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I was telling Tux at the break, he's like, oh, like I kind of know a little bit about this. Like you were kind of asking, like, are you going to get into the atrocities? There's so much that was declassified. I mean, a lot still has not been declassified. But there's so much just about the textbooks. And, like, that's my scandal today.
Yeah.
Because this is the foundation of future scandals, future minis. It's bad. Yeah. I'm going to get into it at the end. But it is a long, terrifying history that is still... It's not even history. It's present day.
Yeah. Because it's Halloween, well, it's October, I want to hear the atrocities just because I am a glutton for punishment.
Yeah.
But I also, like, do not want to hear about this stuff. I don't want to know.
No, but you need to hear. I want to be able to sleep at night. Yeah, you need to hear what they were teaching, and then we can go forward from that.
Yes, yeah.
Because
then
the atrocities make sense.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So, again, they had this textbook called Human Resource Exploitation.
Jesus Christ.
This manual, it was a torture textbook.
Mm-hmm.
Full stop.
Good times. End.
They mentioned in this book that torture techniques often backfire and that the threat of pain was more effective than pain itself.
Mm-hmm.
Then it went on to describe in detail, this is a quote, how to induce psychological regression in the subject by bringing a superior outside force to bear on his will to resist. Some of these techniques were prolonged constraint, prolonged exertion, extreme heat and cold, moisture, deprivation of food and sleep, disrupting routines, solitary confinement, threats of pain, deprivation of sensory stimuli, so just like making the room dark all the time, hypnosis, and just use of drugs. They were just dosing them up with whatever. That would make them feel scared. Oh, and that's just a few.
Yeah,
those were the ones that I'm just like.
Just a grab bag.
You know, a sampling. I'm doing that like I'm picking up the salt and just dribbling it in.
Yeah, like Salt Bae.
Who's Salt Bae?
You don't. That's for later.
Oh, he's like a man who's naked and sprinkling salt?
No, he's just foine and sprinkling salt.
Hell yes.
I mean, this was like.
Okay, we're going to put Salt Bae in the show notes so everyone can see him.
This was from like years ago now.
So in the train.
Sorry.
It's all right. No, I think it's. We needed it.
Your life is improved by knowing about Salt
Absolutely. Bae. Absolutely. I think it's good to break up this, like, you know, these atrocities with some Salt Bae.
Yeah. Can I talk about something else? Let's talk about salt and hot chefs.
Please. So the training manual went on to state the importance of, like, knowing local laws so you would know how to, like, circumvent them.
Oh, my God.
Like, the manual did say, and this was really surprising for me to read, that illegal detention always requires prior headquarters approval.
So there's a paper trail.
Yes. So they do know what laws are. And there is a paper trail. And, like, shame on you for doing this.
That's, I mean, a terrible idea. But also, I guess they're trying to cover their asses. But, like, we want you to tell us that you're going to break the law.
Exactly. So I'm going to get into this later. But we have a paper trail with, like, hey, can we do this? But then we have nothing back.
Uh-huh. Of course.
We have nothing back.
Uh-huh. So. But it happened, so...
Correct.
Dot, dot, dot.
Yes. The manual, it also referred to a 1 to 2 week course of, like, practical work with the prisoners as part of this course. So it is like suggested that maybe U.S. trainers were on the ground in these Latin American countries them like just snatch people off the street and just like, yeah, you're
good job.
You're doing it. Actually, no. Pour more water on him.
Yes.
Like this.
Yes.
Like there you go. Like that. Man, I was like traumatized researching this. A lot of, I mean, of course, there's lots of rapes. There's lots of killings. But they did a lot to like nuns.
Jesus which Christ, is like, of course.
All they were doing is trying to help the poor, which is, I guess, that's why.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really fucked up. So the fact that they have this notation that like practical work is part of the course. Mm-hmm. It's like, wait, so we're going to be going to a foreign country? And
field trip.
Yeah, totally. Field
get trip. The permission slip signed by your mom.
Yes, yes. No, this is a forgery. No. Yes.
May I go break nuns' arms? With the U.S. government, please.
So this supported claims by many former prisoners, people who escaped, people who were let go, or just like people that they just called targets. There was this American nun. Her name was Diana Ortiz. She was targeted and tortured by the Guatemalan army in 1989. She said that U.S. personnel were there in the torture rooms when she was being tortured. Not every time, but they were there.
Yeah, like
there
they were people, knew it was happening.
Correct.
And encouraging it to go forward, yeah.
Yeah. There is a manual called Counterintelligence. Mm-hmm. It defined potential counterintelligence targets as local or national political parties that have goals, beliefs, or ideologies contrary or in opposition to the national government. I'm just like, you mean people who aren't fucking with you? Like, yeah. They're all targets?
You mean they want to keep their resources in their own country?
They're not okay with you, like, disappearing their family? They're a target? In this text, it's recommended that they create a blacklist. This is a quote, persons whose detention was most important to the armed forces. Mm-hmm. It should include not only enemy agents, but also subversive persons. It's everyone.
Yeah.
It is everyone and anyone. It's so vague. So this is a quote from their textbook. A subversive person is a collaborator or sympathizer of the enemy, known or suspect.
Anyone, literally.
Suspect.
Whoever you
like,
feel
like. Like, who told you?
Yeah.
Like, just someone who was being tortured told you that I was just, like, what? There is a manual called Combat Intelligence, and it listed, this is my favorite, it listed ways to identify a guerrilla presence.
Ooh.
This is how I learned that me and everyone I know is a guerrilla. Indicators of an imminent attack by guerrillas include demonstrations by minority groups. Reluctance by civilian, including children, to associate with the U.S. or their local troops. If you're not fucking with the U.S., then you are a guerrilla.
Including children.
Including children is in their manual. Celebration of national or religious festivals. That makes you a guerrilla?
Just having culture that is not malls and McDonald's.
So in a chapter called Indicator of Control by Guerrillas, it was like, how can you tell that a civilian population has been, like, turned by guerrillas? These indicators include, like, a refusal to talk to the government about suspicious behavior. So, like, someone who's not snitching, that's the mark of the guerrilla. They're there.
But you could...
Look at you trying to make sense of
this. Yeah, wow. Exactly. I'm literally trying to make sense of nonsense.
Accusations of government corruption. So if you're talking about government corruption, that's how you know. Circulating petitions, attempts to discredit the government or armed forces, calling government leaders U.S. puppets, urging the youth to avoid the draft, demonstrations or strikes, or accusations of police brutality.
So, like, if you have eyes
and you're using them, yes, yeah, correct,
then you're clearly a
gorilla. You are under the influence of a gorilla presence.
Wow.
Don't you know?
Damn, okay.
Do your own research.
We are all gorillas in this.
So in 1984, this is when the Panama Canal Treaty happened. The school is kicked out of Panama because, you know, Panama went back to Panama, even though we created it. You would know this from episode 2. Mm-hmm. Really listen to episode 2 if you're just like, what?
What's happening?
Prior to this expulsion, there was a lot of bad press, if you could imagine.
But for why?
Yeah, there were a lot of Panamanians who were just like, these people coming out of this school are, you know, the worst humans yeah. we've ever seen. They're doing the worst things. Maybe let's look into this.
Yeah.
So because of all the bad press, there was concerns about, because, you know, they couldn't just close the school. Mm-hmm. They just had to move. They're like, sure. maybe it's like too dangerous to be moving to U.S. soil. Maybe we should move to Puerto Rico instead. Oh, God. But they're like, no, we can move it to Georgia. They moved it to
Georgia.
Fort Bennett, Georgia.
Huh. Okay.
There's a lot of leaks once it's in the States. Uh-huh. There are a lot of people who are just like, what? We're teaching what? So in a superficial, and this is like the most superficial attempt to do like damage control, a page advising against the use of coercive techniques was added to the updated manual. A whole page.
They're like, do this. But also maybe don't.
Correct. So I should just say that the manual is over 1,000 pages.
Oh,
but we're adding one page. God. We're adding one page. So
it's like after the table of contents.
Oh, it's even better. It's a whole page and it's handwritten. That's how you know it's serious.
By who?
I don't know.
What the fuck? Yeah,
so it's handwritten. And they corrected passages that they saw were just bad. So this is a passage that was corrected, air quotes around corrected. So this is the original statement. While we do not stress the use of coercive techniques, we do want to make you aware of them and the proper way to use them. Wink.
Oh my God.
Was altered / corrected to, while we deplore the use of coercive techniques, we do want to make you aware of them so that you may avoid them.
Oh, yes. The ones that I just taught you about for 1,000 pages. Please avoid.
The entire chapter on coercive techniques, still included.
But we deplore it. We include However,
you know what? Some sentences were crossed out.
But left in, but crossed out.
But you can still read them.
Of course.
But left in. But, you know, but corrected. We acknowledge our mistake, so we cross it out. But everyone can still read it.
I cannot.
So these corrections were made in response to a 1984 scandal in which the CIA's training materials for the Contras was leaked.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Which is its own scandal.
Sure.
But it's related but unrelated. It's like they were doing similar things.
Uh-huh.
So when the Contras manuals broke, they're just like, oh shit, like this stuff is very similar.
Yeah.
And then they were leaked. So in 1989, news of SOA and its trained graduates are now starting to make headlines.
Mm-hmm.
Americans are starting to be like, wait, what? Who's in Georgia?
Wait, we're training brown people to be militant in Georgia?
Yes, I know, right? In response to the bad press, SOA, they started to integrate human rights trainings in their course offerings. So in-house human rights trainers who received a whole 16 hours of training were giving courses on human rights. A whole 16 hours. When I read that, I'm like, what kind of Trump University bullshit is this? This is like...
Literally.
16 hours and then you can...
And you're like, a professor of human rights.
Correct. Yes. It is worth noting that these manuals are still very, very, very heavily redacted.
Even the released...
Yes.
Declassified.
Correct. So that's how you know it's real good.
They don't just cross it out, but...
On February 21st, 1997, the Department of Defense, the DOD's Inspector General, completed yet another investigation. It admitted in 1997 that, quote, in creating and using seven different Army manuals from 1982 through early 1991, many mistakes were made and repeated. Really? By numerous and continuously changing personnel in several organizations from Panama to Georgia to Washington, D.C.
These mistakes only happened because they changed staff.
The report then concluded that there was no evidence that a deliberate and orchestrated attempt was made to violate DOD and U.S. Army policies. This report claimed that because somehow the Army didn't know that it was against Army and DOD policy to teach Latin American soldiers to do terrorism, that I mean, they didn't know, so they can't be held liable.
How is the Army supposed to know their own policies, Stephanie? They didn't receive 16 hours of training on these policies.
Their defense is really like, we didn't know human rights were a thing. It's not in the U.S., so like, what's the big deal? This trash DOD report went on to say that lesson plans and materials under scrutiny escaped oversight because they couldn't be read, because they were in Spanish.
Who wrote them? What?
I'm like, was Kaludi Giuliani like the legal representation? Like, this is your defense?
It can't be read.
It can't be read. This has been beyond reproach.
Seriously. Nice knowing ya.
It later came out that all instruction materials were approved for use in English before being translated into Spanish. Of course they were,
because duh.
But that was their defense.
Oh my God.
It was later revealed that SOA instructors, they sent their lesson plans to an army base in Arizona and two different offices in Washington to be reviewed.
In English.
Correct.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Despite all of this, the report failed to assign blame, either individual or collective. Representative Joseph Kennedy II in Massachusetts, he was the one who was like most twisted by this report. He called it whitewashed.
Imagine.
Yeah, but also he called it hogwash. I'm like, sir, need to step up your language. Hogwash. It is a lot more than hogwash.
Malarkey. Sir,
it was his malarkey moment. He said that not taking responsibility, quote, gives the impression that America has somehow blessed this type of activity.
Somehow. Gives the impression.
Just gives the impression.
Sir, we did. And we been done did for 40 fucking plus years.
We been done did. Okay. We been done did. So Kennedy, he had these fiery words after he had met someone who was a human rights instructor at the school. Okay. So with this bad press after this DOD report, they did hire human rights trainers.
Real ones.
Real ones. More than 16 hours.
17.
No, it seemed like they were doing the right things. Okay. And this is what they made their careers on. They hired outside people to come in and teach human rights.
But meanwhile, they're still...
Correct.
All the other classes are like, just fucking rape and kill and beat everyone up.
Yep. So Kennedy talked to one of these instructors.
The real ones.
He told him that no one was seriously interested in listening to him, and that people in his class were laughing at him as he was giving instruction.
Of course, because why would they listen when...
He said that people were, quote, snickering at him.
Uh-huh. So, no, but like, obviously, they're in a school to learn how to be terrorists.
Correct.
And then you have this one random dude with a fucking bow tie and a pocket protector being like, but actually, you probably shouldn't do the naughty stuff.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, get out of here. So Kennedy, he tried for years to get the school closed or at least defunded, and he never got close. There was a really slow piecemeal, like, surfacing, then declassification, then investigation. There was this process that like kept happening throughout the 90s. Nothing ever really stuck, which suggests that there's just a lot of materials because it keeps being leaked.
Uh-huh.
Like every 6 or 7 years, there's like a leak that comes out. So there's probably a lot of more materials that are in circulation that we don't even know about. These terrorism manuals that should have never been created in the first place in response to the Cold War keep being like accidentally repackaged.
Are we still doing this shit?
Yes. We are still currently fully funding the School of the Americas.
I don't want to be Georgia, here right now.
90 minutes from a 90-minute drive south of Atlanta. This is happening. So every few years, there's like a trickle of scandal. New information comes out. But there's never been a full-scale review. There's never been a full-scale reorg of the materials or even the instructors that are teaching these, you know, teaching terrorism. And it's estimated that over 1,000 copies may have just been distributed to Latin American countries and Mexico, Caribbean, Central America. Tux, are you okay?
No. I'm the opposite of okay.
So in 2001, there was an attempt by the School of the America to like rebrand itself. It changed its name. It's now known as, I say now known because again, it's being fully funded. Your tax dollars are going to this. It's now called the Western Hemisphere Institute for Cooperation.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Despite its revamped image and promise of transparency, WINSEC has been very secretive. If you go to their website, there's no mentioning of the School of the Americas on the website. Everything has been scrubbed, and it refuses to publish the names of the military trainees that have been going through their school. It refused freedom of information requests. Only after congressional approval, they like forced them, the Congress forced them in 2009, did it begin to release some of the names and countries of origin of its graduates. The school now offers courses in human rights, ethics, democracy, and peacekeeping. However, by their own records, very few military personnel or police officers have taken these courses. By far, the most popular courses are commando tactics, military intelligence, psychological operations, PSYOPs, and combat training. I will end with the horrifying fact that there have been over 80,000 military and police officers from Latin America and the United States trained at SOA that we know of since 1946. Think on that and shiver. SOA grads continue to wreak havoc in Mexico, the Caribbean, Central and South American countries. They're heavily involved in the drug trade, of course. So if you're an American listening, just know that your tax dollars are still fully funding SOA. I'm still calling it SOA because fuck them.
Sure.
WINSEC, that's, School of Cooperation, fuck off.
Forced cooperation.
Yeah.
Coercion.
So, coercion, yeah. So be irate. You know, get on my level. I plan to just drop SOA into all of my conversations if dinner parties become a thing again. But if you have like right-wing relatives who are complaining about, you know, illegal immigration or their tax dollars, you know, tell them about SOA. Maybe they'll do their own research. They probably won't. But it's not okay because we can't complain about refugees fleeing dirty wars when we are actively involved in them and the U.S. provided the guns, the money, and the textbooks to do the worst thing. So I might do a mini at some point and just talk about their most infamous graduates. There's been 11 dictators, again, that we know of that were graduates of SOA. Pinochet, Noriega are graduates, they're alumna. And I'm just going to end with a very unfun... Tux, are you okay? You're like staring off and your eyes are dead.
I don't know how you managed to make your story for October more horrifying than mine.
Well, it's more horrifying because it's still happening.
Yes. It has affected way more people than my story did and is continuing to affect people.
Yeah. So I'm going to end with like a really unfun fact, but I think everyone needs to know it. You know how the Haitian president was killed 2 months ago?
Yes. Yeah.
Four of the assassins are graduates of SOA.
Of course.
They're Colombian. They were trained in Georgia and they killed a sitting president. This is just the most recent.
Oh my God. Of course they were.
Yeah. The end. Happy Halloween. Have all the nightmares.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
I'm never paying taxes again.
I'm like, is this really Halloween? I'm like, it's fucked up and it's terrifying and it's still happening. So I think
I'm never going to recover from this story.
Yeah. Okay. And you don't even know like things that are should never have happened all the time. And like I mentioned, children were subversive. So just think on that, the things that they did to children and women.
I mean, we can't even see it happening because it's happening in Spanish.
That's their vibe.
On that note, well, our drinks are empty. I guess we're done. America's history is juicy. We just add slow gin and despair.
Accurate.
Thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Tux Lerzel.
Stephanie Domingo, and I'm sorry.
Thank you to Tim Clough, our editor, sound engineer, and podfather. We couldn't do this without you, and maybe we shouldn't anymore.
This is my payback. No,
we need to know this.
Your South Pacific sadness.
Yes, exactly. This is something that people really need to know about.
Oh, and yes.
I am, as much as I need a moment to collect myself, yeah. I'm grateful. I'm going to go have a breakdown now.
Okay.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye. Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on land belonging to the Lenape Nation. Please note that we are not historians. We're just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. A full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. And remember that written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media, and make sure you follow us on Instagram, because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop at beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves, and we have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.